kind of got it. Hold on. Kind of trying to get it here. Hold on, Jacob. I'm having some wiring problems here. Tom, get in here and help me, would you? Tom, I see you. I see you. There. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I hear you got it, John.
Yeah.
No got it?
Well, I'm not the most organized guy to begin with, and I'm diving into the news! I have sent... God, a big mouthful of that awful water. I sent Jacob a picture one time of all these wires I have here, and it's... What does your setup look like compared to my setup? My setup is a
chair with a microphone and a tie line on another chair in front of my living room couch. It's all as simple as simple gets.
If you know how to take a picture on that old phone of yours, send it to Jacob. I'll send mine in. Okay, protesters are clashing. I don't know if we have sound of them clashing, but they were standing over the bridge over there near... this is Green Lake Green Lake area, right, in Woodland Park. And there they were there. They had their signs, and they were protesting. And then they were people saying, hey, let's do something about all the tents and the crime and the fires and everything else. And then you had people coming in, I guess, in favor of tents, crimes, and fires. And then they clashed.
About 90 people live in this park, with 80 more at Green Lake Park.
I think it's horrible.
The situation brought out fed-up residents and coaches to the walking bridges over Aurora Avenue North today. People demanding their parks back. Their frustration?
I mean, it's maxed out.
Counter-protesters supporting the homeless showed up, too.
Dude, you ripped my sign, bro.
By the way, can I just get kind of a ruling on this? Bro, isn't bro like something you say to somebody if you like the guy? Like, hey, bro, let's go out and play pinochle. Can bro
bros love pinochle?
Well, I just generally, but can bro also be used after somebody rips up your sign? I don't understand that, Jacob.
I would say that bro has basically evolved into it's almost exclusively sarcastic usage in my mind.
Okay,
the only time I've used it is like a road rage incident. Like I don't describe anyone who's an actual friend as a bro.
Bro, okay, so bro is now a derogatory term.
I can see that. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Come on. My kids want to play in the park.
The issue...
Did he bro him again on my kids want to play in the park, bro?
If he did, they cut it out of the clip, unfortunately.
This former coach says the famous trails here typically bring out thousands of runners every fall. But earlier this year, the city started denying permits for running teams to host events here because of safety concerns.
Denied. Access denied.
Over the weekend, Seattle Fire responded to 3 fires at camps around Green Lake, including this one. I'm told so far this year, they've responded to 925 fires and illegal burns at encampments, already about 100 more than all of last year.
I'm worried about the kids. I'm concerned.
Parents say there have been too many incidents.
A man with his pants down. They can't go in the bathroom because there's a fire.
Including assault as well.
And out of nowhere, someone walked up, knocked them out, turned around, and came after me.
Now they're calling on the city to get the unhoused help and clear out city parks.
Everyone's pointing the finger, so at what point do we work together? I think we can all solve this. It's solvable.
I like that lady, by the way. Did you watch the clip? She seemed fairly reasonable. So altogether, what'd they say, 70 at one, 90 at another, or something like that, number of people.
68 and 52.
Oh, I got it. More saying also a little bit the clashes between the protesters. That says
that's right. Some protesters just told us they were chased away by the counter-protesters. This is all happening on a pedestrian bridge that you can kind of make out behind me, but we are staying away from that fray because...
Jim Foreman from Cairo, from King 5, would have been on the bridge.
Been in the middle of it.
Right, with a gas mask on. Where is Danger Jim when you need him? I mean, no offense to Dee Dee's son. I wouldn't want to stand there either, especially at a bridge where people might be, you know, throwing stuff at each other, bro. But Foreman could have been right in there. He would have gotten all that mess.
Because the two groups, things stayed relatively benign, but they were shouting at each other. A dog even bit somebody. Right now, this tension over homelessness in Seattle, it's reaching a fever pitch.
Ah, fever pitch. Okay, so what we know is from Seattle Times article last August, they say often when they go into these camps and they move people, hardly anyone takes any shelter at all. Nobody wants to go to a shelter. The numbers are in the single digits. So if they went in there and kicked everybody out and said, hey, we've got shelters for you to go to, very few people would. They just pick up, pack up, leave all their garbage behind, go somewhere else, and then they just – it's like a whack-a-mole thing, right, Tom? They just move from one spot to another spot, right?
I think it's changed a bit, though, and that's one of the things that the city is saying. You know, they have this priority list of encampments and what are the worst ones or the most dangerous ones or the health concerns they have. And they talk about how they have to find housing for the people that are there. And they mentioned Miller Park, where which took like 3 weeks of working with the individual providers to find acceptable places. And most of those people did go to those, you know, accepted shelter. So I think that's the plan. Now, there'll always be some. If you've got 50, I would guess that there'd be at least maybe, you know, a ballpark figure, like, say, 10 of them that might not want to go to a shelter. But that gives them, if they house most of the people that are there, that allows the city to kind of shut down the encampment. And that's what I think has been sort of gradually happening. Right now, you know, you tend the squeaky wheel gets the grease or something. Mm-hmm. The idea here is that because I was thinking this seems like an odd time for this to be coming to a head, because after all, I've been down to Green Lake a lot. In fact, I took my my 90-year-old mother down to Green Lake last night, and things are fine around the lake near like Evans Pool and stuff. There's still a lot of summer activity kind of going on, but where these encampments are kind of like out of the way, like especially in deep in Woodland Park. They're not visible from the street. They're deep inside Woodland Park. Well, who spends a lot of time inside there? Cross-country runners. And that's why this protest of 40 or so people was organized by a former cross-country coach, because they use those trails, and that's where the encampments are. Uh-huh. And so that makes some sense that it's coming to a head right now. School's back in session. That's where a lot of cross-country high schoolers probably college kids, too, practice. And so that makes sense that the fall is the time where it's, you know, coming to a head. And the city just says, we are working on it. They won't tell us if they're at the top of the list. But my hunch is that this is the squeaky wheel, and this may be the next one getting addressed, much like Miller Park up on Capitol Hill finally.
Now, does the wheel actually, the squeaky wheel, is it the sound of gunfire? It's somebody shot and killed?
No,
and then
it may be more
so
fire.
So here's the headline from the Times. This is from the August 19th. When a homeless encampment was cleared, no one went to a shelter. The reasons are complicated. And then they explain that they don't want to go to shelters because you have to have rules. You have to be in at a certain time. You can't be drunk. You can't be high. You want to live like you want to live, which is you want to live in the go on to sort of talk to the people that were there. They said, we're like a family. We like living here where we are. We all sort of hang out together. We have our lives. We support one another. And we don't want to go to a shelter. When they were asked whether or not they would go to tiny homes or the little dog houses that they build, they do like that idea because it's different than a shelter. The rules are not as enforced, and it's a little easier to be able to live the continued life that you want to live. In this case, I guess what you have to have, you keep calling it a squeaky wheel, I assume it has to be a murder, because it was the Green Lake area where the guy was shot, killed somebody, shot somebody, and then I think then they cleared that area up. Or under the I-90, the jungle, where that teenagers went in there to get some sort of deal, a drug deal that went bad, and I think they shot a whole bunch of people, a couple people died, then they clear that out. So what you have to have somebody get shot and killed to have it. The same sort of thing that happened up at Cal Park, that same sort of thing. So maybe fires aren't enough for the people down there.
It's a priority.
Where the protests were. So,
well, violence.
A death. It has to be a death.
If it's deemed as unsafe, yes, they can move in immediately. If it's seen as a health risk or it's unsafe, they can move in immediately. And I think something like a shooting would be. Otherwise, the city and the county are just sort of laboriously going through each one. Now, you mentioned that this is from D.D. Sun's actual report. Miller Park had about 50 tents. The end result, after 3 weeks of service provider engagement, more than 40 individuals were referred to shelters. And that means a person accepted.
Yes. Referred.
Yes. And it says a referral means that a person accepted an available shelter bed. That's the definition in D.D. Sun's report. So
I see. Well, that's not what it says here, but to be referred to a shelter,
that's August,
you can refer
September.
Right, yes, I got it.
No, accepted. Okay.
Right. This is what they say that people do. Like over 90% of referrals made the city outreach service in 2021. The referrals, when the enrollment rates were at their highest, enhanced shelters seem to be the things that people like. These sure. options are open 24/7. So go in there, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You go there and you can get tiny home villages, right? That seems to be the things that people like. The average length of stay at the enhanced shelters, the tiny homes, in 2020 was 102 days and 349 days, basically compared to 68 days in a shelter. So what there you do go. Is you build a tiny home and then allow somebody to just live there for as long as you possibly can. Well, the same thing will occur when it comes to the public housing. We know we had the big story yesterday, $50 million has been found out of taxpayers' pockets and will be used to buy hotels and places like that. The question is,
that's right.
Does the person then just live in there indefinitely? Or is there some point where you leave? I'd seen a really interesting piece yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. Jason Riley was talking about people that have been living in like these housing, the types of housing in, say, in New York City for 40 years, generations using public housing that was supposed to be sort of temporary, but it never move you up and move you out. But this will continue. That's one great big setup. There are some tent that's like huge cities off to the right. You come off of I-9 to get onto I-5 to the right there. It's massive, just sprawling, rolling kind of hills of tents and cobbled together pallets of wood. It's like a little town that they have set up in there. Mm-hmm. I guess they have them all over the place and eventually they move them out. I think there has to be a shooting town. That seems to be the thing that the city reacts to most.
Not on paper, John. Yeah, but it's true. There's certain criteria. If it's deemed as an immediate health risk and or safety,
it's a safety risk for the teenage cross-country people. It's a safety risk for the kids in Ballard that want to use the water park this summer.
But
that
they think
so
they
it is a safety risk to the general public.
Risk to within, who? Within the camp as well. If someone is firing from a camp in Green Lake, whether it's inside the camp or outside the camp, that would be a public safety issue. That's why the city is not giving permits to allow people to run through a Woodland Park Zoo, or Woodland Park, not the next to the zoo, because it's deemed as not safe for them to enter. So that's the first step. My hunch is they're processing this. This might be the next one to go, but when it's as big as it is, between the two encampments there, 150 people, that's going to take a long time. If it took 3 weeks to get 50 tents housed, it's going to take, what, maybe three times that to get these all done?
This is like Groundhog Day. You and I talking about this, whether it's this tent or another tent or that thing or this thing. This is Seattle. This is Seattle. And they'll just pack up and move. I talked to a cop who said, we stand there. Remember, they used to bring in those guys that would clean it all up. The cops have to stand there because they don't want to get into trouble. So the cops stand there and watch. And what they do is the people pick up the crap. They move over a couple of streets away. They wait for everybody to leave and they go back in there again. It is the whack-a-mole problem because we don't have a problem with you doing drugs. We're not going to enforce that because that's racist. And we'll spend more and more money. And if you subsidize something, you get more of it. And we'll get more homeless people. We do.
Well,
we get more homeless people, right?
Yes. We're moving toward the shelter first, housing first, as Hannah was saying the other day. And that's what Didi Sun ends her report by saying, yes, now in the next couple of months, we're going to have all the, 150 or whatever units supposedly opening up in these new buildings that they just built. So that'll relieve some of it. But yeah, when you have 5,000 people homeless, finding housing for 150 of them is not going to solve it.
Right.
It's just one more step.
Bill Gates isn't homeless. They are getting divorced. I don't know where he's living. I think his wife is living in that compound they have in Medina, but this is uncomfortable. Bill was on, I don't know if he's on promoting his book or that he wants to do more stuff with green energy. He's got a bunch of different organizations that are looking for giant handouts from the government. And Bill has been doing the tours. And when you get a chance to talk to him, most people that interview him, as it was described in this article, as fairly softball questions, about you're such a great guy, we love you, you give away all your money. And then Judy Woodworth gets on, and was it 10 minutes of the conversation Or was it near the end of the conversation that these questions were asked, Jacob?
Yeah. In fact, Gizmodo compliments Judy Woodruff on a PBS NewsHour by saying, see, you can be a journalist. You can still ask the softball questions, but then incorporate in the end. And it was the last three questions of her interview that made Bill Gates somewhat uncomfortable.
It was 2011, Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein, a pedophile who really had a thing for young women. And he and Bill met, and they hung out a couple of times. Bill actually went to his townhouse late one night and then wrote to a friend an email. It's an interesting lifestyle. I don't know if it's right, if it's you know, something that I would like. But he'd spent some time with Epstein. He had heard from people, this is according to the New York Times in a Rolling Stone article, that he had heard that Epstein might have been a billionaire, might have had a whole bunch of money, and would have been one of these guys to get, hey, give away your money to this, to the charity thing. And Bill and Epstein were working together on this. And then, well, we'll save it. We'll take the questions, because it is odd when he does try to dismiss the direction of the questions by pointing out Jeffrey Epstein's living condition.
Okay, Tracy.
We'll save that. Hear that story from Aaron? Uh-oh, look out. Mortgage rates could be increasing. Government wants to try to get a hold of this inflation that we've all had to experience every time we go to buy something. So maybe they want to put the brakes on this economy. You can't print $6 trillion without doing something. So Keel Mortgage, don't forget, still historically low. Get that mortgage. Get the help from Keel Mortgage if you want to refinance that house of yours. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778 KIEL. The taunting rule came into the NFL in August. And it was basically just trying to get better sportsmanship and to make sure that everybody got along. Here is, I like this call. I don't know if we got this or not, Jacob. I play it here on my phone. Hang on. Ready? Here we go. Watch this. And there.
After the play, unsportsmanlike conduct, number 88 spinning the ball in the opponent's bench. That's number 88, first punt, for disqualification.
Spinning the ball, Tom, in the opponent's midst. You're not allowed to do that.
That was this year?
Yeah, that was this year.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That was the call. That was the one. That was the one call. The instructor, officials have been instructed to strictly enforce the taunting rule in the interest of making, quote, strong statement regarding respect among everyone on the field. It's all about respect. And that was just one of the calls. Apparently, the players hate it. There was a head coach for Washington, Ron Rivera, is one of the people that actually does like the taunting rule. We bring this up because how many times would the Seahawks be called on taunting, Tom?
Twice, once each game. And I just want to point out, not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but two of the coaches on this new rules committee that passed this emphasis on taunting, Indianapolis Colts coach and the coach we had last week as well. Both those coaches benefited from the taunting calls, so maybe there's something to this. Right now, it's seen as unfair. Most of the sports shows, you know, the Seahawks collapse was not of great national interest. What was of great national interest in the Seahawks game was that the DJ Reed call of taunting, and most of the shows that I watched on ESPN all thought that was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The union has now come out and asked the NFL to officially abandon this ridiculous rule, and there seems to be sentiment among players and fans, if not necessarily coaches, about this or for this.
It was, so the Washington coach says that what it does is they're trying to stop people from having the big brawls, the big fights, the big Donnybrooks that go on.
Okay, we had this example. One guy taunts a guy, and they come back with triple payback, and the next thing you got a big fight on your hand. You got guys coming from left field hitting each other, you know. And that's really what you're really, to me, I think the referees are relevant for. They're just trying to get it quieted down. And that's really what's, I mean, you can do the celebration. They send a tape out and explain exactly what's taunting and what's not. And I think if you look at the tape and you follow the tape, then it makes sense. It's about, you want these guys to keep their personality. You want them to be who they are, because these guys are explosive players that make dynamic plays. But the intent is so that somebody doesn't do something that gets somebody to come back with a little retribution. You don't want that. You don't want, you know, somebody out for revenge.
It's all about this idea of, like, you disrespect somebody, right, bruh? So that you you taunt the person, then so you've disrespected them, and then they're going to take a shot on you later on because you've humiliated them in front of everybody. Jamal Adams talks about getting the taunting call.
Some or tick-tack. It's just like DJ Reed, and, you know, on the taunting penalty. Come on, man. You know, you're taking the emotions and the passion out of it.
Will he bro somebody on this? There's 10 seconds left. Yes or no? Tom, no. No?
The game of football. So at the end of the day, that's the rule. We have to play smarter. But, yeah, we definitely shot ourselves in the foot with a lot of our penalties that led to points and extended drives.
I wonder if the NFL keeps it. I don't think they cave on it. I think they keep it going and maybe they get rid of it. It'll be interesting to see how often they will have to call this. There is a sort of general theory in when it comes to the NBA, which is let them play, right? Because you can start allowing the fouls. You start calling too many fouls. It's a really interesting sort of fine line that if you start calling too many fouls, people get mad, let them play. But if you start allowing people to get away with egregious fouling, the whole tenor of the game begins to change where, right. I mean, it's like down in the paint, they're just punching one another. So it's the fine line between the referees allowing just enough steam to be blown off without it getting too intense. But then at the same time, you start calling these, as he calls them, ticky-tack fouls that you think this is, you could change the entire game based upon these expressions of I don't know, dominance, right?
So, the issue is, why is it that Seattle has 20% of the calls so far? I mean, like, something like 80% of the teams haven't had any taunting calls. So what is it about Seattle? Well, Seattle classically, as defined by Pete Carroll, he's the guy who is all, he always pumps up his players. He wants to use that energy, wants them to explode. He wants, it kind of caters to the emotional pitch that this particular coach has that leads players to maybe, you know, go above and beyond themselves in terms of their prowess as football players, but it also makes it harder for them to then control it. I would think somebody who works for Belichick, who is a very cerebral kind of coach, and he figures, listen, just do your job, we'll win, because I figured it out, the strategy involved, and emotion doesn't play a central role to his success. With Pete Carroll, I think it's starting to bite him. And even Pete Carroll just says he thinks it's a good thought. He has no problem trying to trim the taunting aspects of football. He says it's just hard to manage it. And so he's sort of in agreement. We've just got to be coached smarter. If all of a sudden they come up with an arbitrary rule, you can't really fight the rule as much as you can adapt to the rule as best you can. And they say this year, every year, NFL decides what's the biggest problem with our game and how are we going to deal with it. So they did an emphasis, they say, a few years ago on holding. Then it was blindside and crack back blocks. This year it's going to be taunting. My hunch is they're not going to change the rule. But as officials start, remember when there was all that, what's a call, what's a catch and what isn't a catch? Yeah. That whole hullabaloo. They started calling non-catches or catches that were outraged fans enough early on in the season, and then they kind of tailed off. My hunch is there'll be fewer taunting calls in the second half of the season. It might be because players are adapting, or it might be because officials are adapting and realizing, ticky-tack is not the way we want to go.
I can't remember the guy, his name. Maybe you're, it was a college coach here in the state of Washington. I forget which college. And his players would help the opponents up. Do you remember this?
That, no.
Yeah. I forget the guy's name. Oh, he's got a nickname.
It's not Mike Leach.
Huh? No.
That sounds like something Mike Leach
would do. No. I think it was a small college somewhere right outside of Seattle somewhere. Okay. That you would, if you knock the guy down, you'd reach down and help your opponent up. You'd pull him up.
Okay.
Right. And it was this whole idea of like, look, we're out here to compete as hard as we possibly can, but we are going to also respect one another on the field. And it was all about respect. Smokey or his kind of name like that. I forget the guy's name. Somebody's going to text in Jacob as soon as we go to the commercial break.
Oh, yeah, the PLU coach. The Dory's a good friend.
Yes. PLU. Right. Yep. Frosty. Okay. Right.
Frosty,
Westering or something like that. Yeah, that's the idea of, which was always amazing to me when you would watch it. And it is a little just sort of like, God, that just changes the whole feeling of the guys on the field, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, it is a religious college. I mean, Pacific Lutheran. So
yes.
they're you know, how would Jesus play football? I guess that's what you have to ask yourself.
Well, a lot of these guys are deeply religious that play football in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, apparently not all of them are. If taunting was a problem, they can't all be religious. Although I suppose you can be religious and swear up a storm as well.
That's the other thing they're trying to stop. They're trying to stop swearing. They're going to have penalties for swearing. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. That seems,
yeah.
Good luck with that. I remember a couple of years ago, remember they tried to stop the use of the N-word, and all the players said, "What are you talking about? This is how we talk to each other."
That have they gotten rid of that one?
I think so. I mean, I think that was one of those things that there was such controversy about it eventually kind of faded away. I don't know if they had ever had any official policy change, but it just sort of stopped being called. They just thought it was ridiculous.
We have that rule here at Cairo with Tracy Taylor.
Yeah, I know. I swear up a storm.
I know. All right, bro. What's happening out there, bro?
All right, bro.
There we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Much appreciated. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Here comes the 8th of October. Delayed, I think, a year and something or other, Tom. Wasn't James Bond supposed to come out last November?
Originally, it was going to be April of 2020.
Uh-huh.
They then delayed it to the fall in October, and now it's an entire year later. So it's like 18-month delay.
It's coming. So here we go. This is Daniel Craig's last Bond. He's done with the series. I don't know how much. I can't remember how many he'd done. And now the big question is who will take over for James Bond. But Daniel Craig was asked by somebody about whether or not James Bond, maybe they should have a woman play the lead role of James Bond. And do we have sound of him answering this or no?
This was, I believe, a print interview. So.
Do we have an actual quote from him, Tom?
Yes, we do.
All right. What
and
say?
By the way, the best thing about this is, you know who he spoke to?
Mm.
First off, it's a print magazine, which is rare enough as it is. It's Radio Times print magazine. I've never even heard Radio Times magazine.
Times. Yes.
So that's who he gave this big breaking interview. Since he has to do publicity, he probably figured, I know, I'll talk to Radio Times print magazine and no one else will have to ever interview me because everyone reads that.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, he said the answer. So there has been talk, you know, there's been a lot of talk with Idris Elba that maybe the next Bond might be black. He could be gay, and so the suggestion has also been, how about, maybe casting a woman? So he's asked about that, just in general conversation. The answer to that is very simple, he says. There should simply be better parts for women and actors of color. Why should a woman play James Bond when there should be a part just as good as James Bond, but for a woman?
Right.
So his idea is, don't upset the apple cart with James Bond. Just create an equally compelling character and, proceed accordingly.
Yeah.
So, fine. I mean, I think that's a smart, safe answer on his part. I think there's a lot of fun in reexamining cultural icons from a different perspective. But I can see if you're the, is it the Broccoli family that
owns
the property, that they might, the problem with, these kinds of things is that would you alienate an audience of James Bond fans that's, lasted for 50 years?
Yeah.
Would you alienate them by going in too different a direction? I mean, I can't think of a more different direction than, say, Roger Moore and Daniel Craig. I mean, they're completely different kinds of actors.
Yeah.
The question is, would you alienate whatever the core Bond audience is, or would you broaden it by, casting it somewhat differently, giving it, minority actor or a change the gender or something like that?
Well, first of all, I completely dismiss the idea of having a change the gender. That's unnecessary.
Okay.
People are going into a James Bond movie. It doesn't matter what color the person is that's playing James Bond. They're there for the cars. They're there for the guns. They're there for the incredible, special effects, the flying over stuff, the things blowing up, him jumping here, jumping there. They want to see him fight. They want to see all that, right? It doesn't matter. But they want to see the sex stuff, too. It's fairly tame when you consider how a lot of other movies show stuff. And, you know, it's always, he seduces her with a drink or whatever, and then he runs his hand down the lower part of her back, and the next thing you know, it's in the morning, and, you know, there's a parrot at the window, and that's supposed to mean something, and off James Bond goes. So, but that's who he is, and that's, he represents this sort of super macho guy, right? And that's what people want to go see. So that's James Bond, and you don't mess around with it by putting a female in there. What is she going to do? Play the, like, be like James Bond? Drive the car real fast, jump over things, shoot people?
Well, we already have. I mean, we have plenty of examples of women doing that. Women are starring in action figures. I mean, Charlize Theron, you know, has done that in a bunch of movies. And she's very, you know, appealing and very good looking and stylish and, you know, shoots up a storm. The question is, do you want to monkey with an iconic character or not? I'd be willing to see it. I don't know, though. Usually James Bond actors play multiple movies, and I don't know if the thrill would be gone after one or two movies, or that would
what thrill?
You know, well, the thrill of seeing a different take on James Bond. But I think you could do that just with casting alone. Just like I said, I saw more Roger Miller movies. Sean Connery didn't do that many. He started Roger Moore was terrible, I think, and Daniel Craig is fantastic. And so the two are, you couldn't have two more different actors, I think, than those two playing the same role. So just cast somebody else.
Yeah, good. What's wrong, Tracy? You seem upset about something. I heard you yell out.
I loved Roger Moore as Bond.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
You like your
great
men quippy, huh?
Yes, and sleek. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, Daniel Craig is pretty great, too, but...
Okay.
You know.
Okay. All right. Wow. All right.
I think John Curley would be a great James Bond.
No,
come on,
not,
say
no.
it, say it, say it, no. Bond. Do it, come on.
Bond, James Bond.
Oh, stop it.
Curley.
Okay, fine.
John
Curley. John Curley.